might have made if you and our beloved Princess Aelin had been betrothed, if Wendlin had not rejected the offer to formally unite our kingdoms, likely at Maeve's behest. A smile in Rowan's direction. Her world tilted a bit. Even Adian had paled. No one had ever hinted that there had been an official attempt at betrothing them, or that the Ash Rivers had truly left Terrasen to war and ruin. "Whatever will the adoring masses say of their savior princess?" Darrow mused, putting his hands flat on the table. "When they hear of how she has spent her time while they suffered." A slap in the face, one after another. "But," Darrow added, "you've always been good at whoring yourself out, Adian. Though I wonder if Princess Aelin knows what..." Aelin lunged, not with flame, but steel. The dagger shuddering between Darrow's fingers flickered with the light of the crackling hearth. She snarled in the old man's face, Rowan and Adian half out of their chairs, Ren reaching for a weapon, but looking sick. Sick at the sight of the ghost leopard now sitting where Lysandra had been a moment ago. Murtaugh gaped at the shapeshifter. But Darrow glared at Aelin, his face white with rage. "You want to sling insults at me, Darrow? Then go ahead," Aelin hissed, her nose almost touching his. "But you insult my own again, and I won't miss next time." She flicked her eyes to the dagger between the old man's splayed fingers, a hair's breadth separating the blade from his speckled flesh. "I see you inherited your father's temper," Darrow sneered. "Is this how you plan to rule? When you don't like someone, you'll threaten them?" He slid his hand from the blade and pulled back far enough to cross his arms. "What would Orlan think of this behavior, this bullying?" "Choose your words wisely, Darrow," Adian warned. Darrow lifted his brows. "All the work I have done, all that I have sacrificed these past 10 years, has been in Orlan's name, to honor him and to save his kingdom, my kingdom. I do not plan to let a spoiled, arrogant child destroy that with her temper tantrums. Did you enjoy the riches of Rifthold these years, princess? Was it very easy to forget us in the north when you were buying clothes and serving the monster who butchered your family and friends?" "Men and money and a unified Terrasen." "Even your cousin, despite his whoring, helped us in the north. And Ren Alsbrook," a wave of the hand in Ren's direction, "while you were living in luxury, did you know that Ren and his grandfather were scraping together every copper they could, all to find a way to keep the rebel effort alive, that they squatted in shanties and slept under horses?" "That's enough," Adian said.
"Let him go on," Aelin said, sitting back in her seat and crossing her arms.
"What else is there to say, princess? Do you think the people of Terrasen will be glad to have a queen who served their enemy? Who shared a bed with the son of their enemy?"
Lysandra snarled softly, rattling the glasses. Darrow was unfazed.
"And a queen who now undoubtedly shares a bed with a fey prince who served the other enemy at our backs. What do you suppose our people will make of that?"
She didn't want to know how Darrow had guessed, what he'd read between them. "Who shares my bed," she said, "is none of your concern."
"And that is why you are not fit to rule. Who shares the queen's bed is everyone's concern. Will you lie to our people about your past, deny that you served the deposed king, and served his son too in a different manner?"
Beneath the table, Rowan's hand shot out to grip her own, his fingers coated in ice that soothed the burning fire starting to flicker at her nails. Not in warning or reprimand, just to tell her that he, too, was struggling with the effort to keep from using the pewter food platter to smash in Darrow's face. So she didn't break Darrow's stare, even as she laced her fingers with Rowan's.
"I will tell my people," Aelin said quietly, but not weakly.
"The entire truth.
I will show them the scars on my back from Endovir, the scars on my body from my years as Selena Sardothian, and I will tell them that the new king of Otterlin is not a monster. I will tell them that we have one enemy, the bastard down in Morath, and Dorian Haveliard is the only chance for survival and future peace between our two kingdoms."
"And if he is not, will you shatter his stone castle as you shattered the glass one?"
Kaol had mentioned this months ago. She should have considered it more, that ordinary humans might demand checks against her power, against the power of the court gathering around her. But let Darrow believe she'd shattered the glass castle. Let him believe she'd killed the king. Better than the potentially disastrous truth.
"Should you still wish to be a part of Terrasen?" Darrow continued when none of them replied. "I'm sure Adian can find some use for you in the Bane, but I will have no use for you in Orinth."
She flicked her brows up. "Is there anything else that you have to say to me?" His gray eyes turned flinty.
"I do not recognize your right to rule. I do not recognize you as the rightful queen of Terrasen. Neither do the lords Sloane, Ironwood, and Gunnar, who make up the remaining surviving majority of what was once your uncle's court. Even if the Alsbrook family sides with you, that is still one vote against four. General Ashriver has no lands or title here, and no say as a result. As for Lady Lysandra, Caravere is not a recognized territory, nor do we recognize her lineage or your purchase of those lands."
Formal words, for a formal declaration.
"Should you return to Orinth and seize your throne without our invitation, it will be considered an act of war and treason."
Darrow pulled a piece of paper from his jacket. Lots of fancy writing and four different signatures on the bottom.
"As of this moment, until it is otherwise decided, you shall remain a princess by blood, but not queen."
Chapter 5 Aelin stared and stared at that piece of paper, at the names that had been signed long before tonight. The men who had decided against her without meeting her. The men who had changed her future, her kingdom, with just their signatures. Perhaps she should have waited to call this meeting until she was in Orinth, until her people saw her return, and it would have been harder to kick her to the curb of the White Palace. Aelin breathed. "Our doom gathers in the south of Otterlin. Yet this is what you focus on?"
Darrow sneered. "When we have need of your skill set, we will send word."
No fire burned in her, not even an ember, as if Darrow had clenched it in his fist, snuffed it out.
"The Bane," Adian said with a hint of that legendary insolence, "will answer to none but Aelin Gelathinius." "The Bane," Darrow spat, "is now ours to command. In the event that there is no fit ruler on the throne, the lords control the armies of Terrasen."
He again surveyed Aelin, as if sensing the vague plan to publicly return to her city, to make it harder for him to shut her out, glimmering as it formed.
"Set foot in Orinth, girl, and you will pay." "Is that a threat?"
Adian snarled, a hand darting to grip the hilt of the sword of Orinth sheathed at his side.
"It is the law," Darrow said simply. "One generations of Galathinius rulers have honored."
There was such a roaring in her head, and such a still emptiness in the world beyond.
"The Volg march on us. A Volg king marches on us,"
Adian pushed, the general incarnate, And your queen, Darrow, might be the only person capable of keeping them at bay. War is a game of numbers, not magic. You know this, Adian. You fought at Thoralis.
The great plain before Orinth, host to the final doomed battle as the Empire had swept down upon them. Most of Terrasen's forces and commanders had not walked away from the bloodbath, so thorough streams ran red for days afterward. If Adian had fought in it, gods, he must have been barely 14. Her stomach turned.
Darrow concluded, "Magic failed us once before. We will not trust in it again."
Adian snapped, "We will need allies."
"There are no allies," Darrow said, "unless Her Highness decides to be useful and gain us men and arms through marriage."
A sharp glance at Rowan.
"We are alone."
Aelin debated revealing what she knew, the money she'd schemed and killed to attain, but something cold and oily clanged through her. Marriage to a foreign king or prince or emperor. Would this be the cost? Not just in bloodshed, but in dreams yielded? To be a princess eternal but never a queen? To fight with not just magic, but the other power in her blood. Royalty. She could not look at Rowan, could not face those pine-green eyes without being sick. She had laughed once at Dorian, laughed and scolded him for admitting that the thought of marriage to anyone but his soul-bonded was abhorrent. She'd chided him for choosing love over the peace of his kingdom. Perhaps the gods did hate her. Perhaps this was her test. To escape one form of enslavement only to walk into another. Perhaps this was the punishment for those years in Rifthold's riches. Darrow gave her a small, satisfied smile.
"Find me allies, Aelin Galathinius, and perhaps we shall consider your role in Terrasen's future. Think on it. Thank you for asking us to meet."
Silently, Aelin rose to her feet. The others did as well, save for Darrow. Aelin plucked up the piece of paper he had signed and examined the damning words, the scribbled signatures. The crackling fire was the only sound. Aelin silenced it, and the candles, and the wrought iron chandelier over the table. Darkness fell, cleaved only by twin sharp inhales of breath, Murtaugh and Wren. The patter of rain filled the black room. Aelin spoke into the dark, toward where Darrow was seated.
"I suggest, Lord Darrow, that you become accustomed to this. For if we lose this war, darkness will reign forever."
There was a scratch and a hiss, then a match sputtered as it lit a candle on the table. Darrow's wrinkled, hateful face flickered into view.
"Men can make their own light, heir of Brannan."
Aelin stared at the sole flame Darrow had sparked. The paper in her hands wilted into ashes. Before she could speak, Darrow said,
"That is our law, our right. You ignore that decree, princess, and you defile all that your family stood and died for. The lords of Terrasen have spoken."
Rowan's hand was solid against her lower back, but Aelin looked to Wren, his face tight. And over the roaring in her head, she said,
"Whether or not you vote in my favor, there is a spot for you in this court, for what you helped Adian and the captain do, for Nehemia."
Nehemia, who had worked with Wren, fought with him. Something like pain rippled in Wren's eyes, and he opened his mouth to speak, but Darrow cut him off.
"What a waste of a life that was," Darrow spat,
A princess actually dedicated to her people, who fought until her last breath for...
One more word,
Rowan said softly.
And I don't care how many lords support you or what your laws are. One more word about that, and I will gut you before you can get up from that chair. Understand?
For the first time, Darrow looked into Rowan's eyes and blanched at the death he found waiting there. But the lord's words had found their mark, leaving a shuddering sort of numbness in their wake. Adian snatched Aelin's dagger off the table.
We'll take your thoughts into consideration.
He scooped up his shield and put a hand on Aelin's shoulder to guide her from the room. It was only the sight of that dented and scarred shield, the ancient sword hanging at his side, that set her feet moving, slicing through that thick numbness. Ren moved to open the door, stepping into the hall beyond to scan it, giving Lysandra a wide berth as she padded past, Evangeline and Fleetfoot on her fluffy tail. Secrecy be damned. Aelin met the young lord's eyes and drew in breath to say something when Lysandra snarled down the hall. A dagger was instantly in Aelin's hand, angled and ready. But it was Darrow's messenger hurtling for them.
Rifthold!
He panted as he skidded to a stop, flinging rain on them.
One of the scouts from the Farian Gap just raced past. The Ironteeth host flies for Rifthold. They mean to sack the city.
Aelin stood in a clearing just past the inn's glow, the cold rain plastering her hair and raising bumps on her skin, soaking them all, because Rowan now buckled on the extra blades she handed him, conserving each drop of his magic for what he was about to do. They'd let the messenger spill the information he'd received. Not much at all. The Ironteeth host lingering in the Farian Gap were now flying for Rifthold. Dorian Havilliard would be their target, dead or alive. They'd be upon the city by nightfall tomorrow, and once Rifthold was taken, Erewhon's net across the middle of the continent would be complete. No forces from Melisande, Fenharrow, or Eelwe could reach them, and none of Terrasen's forces could get to them either. Not without wasting months to trek around the mountains.
There's nothing to be done for the city,
Adian said, his voice cutting through the rain. The three of them lingered under the cover of a large oak, all keeping an eye on Ren and Murtaugh, who were speaking with Evangeline and Lysandra, now back in her human form. Her cousin went on, rain pinging against the shield across his back.
If the witches fly on Rifthold, then Rifthold already is gone.
Aelin wondered if Manon Blackbeak would be leading the attack, if it'd be a blessing. The wingleader had saved them once before, but only as a payment for a life debt. She doubted the witch would feel obliged to throw them a bone any time soon. Adian met Rowan's gaze.
Dorian must be saved at all costs. I know Parrington's... Erewhon's style. Don't believe any promises they make. And don't let Dorian be taken again.
Adian dragged a hand through his rain-soaked hair and added,
Or yourself, Rowan.
They were the most hideous words she'd ever heard. Rowan's confirming nod made her knees buckle. She tried not to think about the two glass vials Adian had handed the prince moments before, what they contained. She didn't even know when or where he'd acquired them.
Anything but that. Anything but...
Rowan's hand brushed hers.
I will save him,
he murmured. I wouldn't ask this of you unless it was...
Dorian is vital. Lose him, and we lose any support in Otterlan.
And one of the few magic wielders who could stand against Morath. Rowan's nod was grim.
I serve you,
Aelin. Do not apologize for putting me to use.
Because only Rowan, riding the winds with his magic, could reach Rifthold in time. Even now he might be too late. Aelin swallowed hard, fighting the feeling that the world was being ripped from under her feet. A glimmer of movement near the tree line caught her eye, and Aelin schooled her face into neutrality as she studied what had been left by little, spindly hands at the base of a gnarled oak. None of the others so much as blinked in its direction. Rowan finished with his weapons, glancing between her and Adian with a warrior's frankness.
"Where do I meet you, once I've secured the prince?"
Adian said.
"Run north! Stay clear of the Farian Gap!"
Darrow appeared at the other end of the clearing, barking an order for Murtaugh to come to him.
"No,"
Aelin said. Both warriors turned. She stared northward into the roiling rain and lightning. She would not set foot in Orinth. She would not see her home.
"Find me allies,"
Darrow had sneered. She didn't dare glance at what the little folk had left in the shadow of that rain-lashed tree mere feet away. Aelin said to Adian,
"If Ren is to be trusted, you tell him to get to the Bane, and to be ready to march and press from the north. If we are not to lead them, then they will have to work around Darrow's orders as best they can."
Adian's brows rose.
"What are you thinking?"
Aelin jerked her chin at Rowan.
"Get a boat, and travel south with Dorian. Land is too risky, but your winds on the seas can get you there in a few days. To Skull's Bay."
"Shit,"
Adian breathed. But Aelin pointed with a thumb over a shoulder to Ren and Murtaugh, as she said to her cousin,
"You told me that they were in communication with Captain Rolf. Get one of them to write a letter of recommendation for us. Right now."
"I thought you knew Rolf,"
Adian said. Aelin gave him a grim smile.
"He and I parted on bad terms, to say the least. But if Rolf can be turned to our side..."
Adian finished for her.
"Then we'd have a small fleet that could unite north and south, brave the blockades."
And it was a good thing she'd taken all that gold from Aerobin to pay for it. "Skull's Bay might be the only safe place for us to hide, to contact the other kingdoms." She didn't dare tell them that Rolf might have far more than a fleet of blockade runners to offer them, if she played it right. She said to Rowan,
"Wait for us there. We'll strike out for the coast tonight, and sail to the Dead Islands. We'll be 2 weeks behind you."
Adian clasped Rowan on the shoulder in farewell, and headed for Ren and Murtaugh. A heartbeat later, the old man was hobbling into the inn, Darrow on his heels, demanding answers. As long as Murtaugh wrote that letter to Rolf, she didn't care. "Alone with Rowan," Aelin said.
"Darrow expects me to take this order lying down. But if we can rally a host in the south, we can push Erewhon right onto the blades of the Bane."
"It still might not convince Darrow and the others."
"I'll deal with that later," she said, spraying water as she shook her head. "For now, I have no plans to lose this war because some old bastard has learned he likes playing king."
Rowan's grin was fierce, wicked. He leaned in, grazing his mouth against hers.
"I have no plans to let him keep that throne either, Aelin."
She only breathed, "Come back to me." The thought of what awaited him down in Rifthold struck her again.
Gods. Oh, gods. If anything happened to him.
He brushed a knuckle down her wet cheek, tracing her mouth with his thumb. She put a hand on his muscled chest, right where those two vials of poison were now hidden. For a heartbeat, she debated turning the deadly liquid within into steam. But if Rowan was caught, if Dorian was caught...
I can't let you go,
You can,
he said with little room for argument. The voice of her prince commander.
And you will.
Rowan again traced her mouth.
When you find me again, we will have that night. I don't care where or who is around.
He brushed a kiss to her neck and said onto her rain-slick skin,
You are my fire heart.
She grabbed his face in both hands, drawing him down to kiss her. Rowan wrapped his arms around her, crushing her against him, his hands roaming as if he were branding the feel of her into his palms. His kiss was savage, ice and fire twining together. Even the rain seemed to pause as they at last drew away, panting. And through the rain and fire and ice, through the dark and lightning and thunder, a word flickered into her head, an answer and a challenge, and a truth she immediately denied, ignored. Not for herself, but for him. For him. Rowan shifted in a flash brighter than lightning. When she finished blinking, a large hawk was flapping up through the trees and into the rain-tossed night. Rowan loosed a shriek as he banked right, toward the coast, the sound of farewell and a promise and a battle cry. Aelin swallowed the tightness in her throat as Adian approached and gripped her shoulder.
Lysandra wants Murtaugh to take Evangeline for lady training. The girl refuses to go. You might need to help.
The girl was indeed clinging to her mistress, shoulders shaking with the force of her weeping. Murtaugh looked on helplessly, now back from the inn. Aelin stalked through the mud, the ground squelching. How far away, how long ago their merry morning today now seemed. She touched Evangeline's soaked hair, and the girl pulled away long enough for Aelin to say to her,
You are a member of my court, and as such you answer to me. You are wise and brave and a joy, but we are headed into dark, horrible places where even I fear to tread.
Evangeline's lip wobbled. Something in Aelin's chest strained, but she let out a low whistle, and Fleetfoot, who had been cowering from the rain under their horses, slunk over.
I need you to care for Fleetfoot, Aelin said,
stroking the hound's damp head, her long ears.
Because in those dark, horrible places, a dog would be in peril. You are the only one I trust with her safety. Can you look after her for me?
She should have cherished them more, those happy, calm, boring moments on the road. Should have savored each second they were all together, all safe. Above the girl, Lysandra's face was tight. Her eyes shone with more than just the rain. But the lady nodded at Aelin, even as she surveyed Murtaugh once more with a predator's focus.
Stay with Lord Murtaugh. Learn about this court and its workings, and protect my friend,
Aelin said to Evangeline, squatting to kiss Fleetfoot's sodden head.
Once. Twice.
The dog absently licked the rain off her face.
Can you do that?
Aelin repeated. Evangeline stared at the dog, at her mistress, and nodded. Aelin kissed the girl's cheek and whispered into her ear,
Work your magic on these miserable old men while you're at it.
She pulled away to wink at the girl.
Win me back my kingdom, Evangeline.
But the girl was beyond smiles and nodded again. Aelin kissed Fleetfoot one last time and turned to her awaiting cousin as Lysandra knelt in the mud before the girl, brushing back her wet hair and speaking too low for her fey ears to detect. Adian's mouth was a hard line as he dragged his eyes away from Lysandra and the girl and inclined his head toward Ren and Murtaugh. Aelin fell into step beside him, pausing a few feet from the Alsbrook lords.
"Your letter, Majesty,"
Murtaugh said, extending a wax-sealed tube. Aelin took it, bowing her head in thanks. Adian said to Ren,
"Unless you want to swap one tyrant for another, I suggest you get the Bane and any others ready to push from the north."
Murtaugh answered for his grandson,
"Darrow means well."
"Darrow," Adian interrupted, "is now a man of limited days."
They all looked to her. But Aelin watched the inn flickering through the trees, and the old man once again storming for them, a force of nature in his own right. She said,
"We don't touch Darrow."
"What?"
Adian snapped. Aelin said, "I bet all my money that he's already taken the steps to ensure that if he meets an untimely death, we never set foot in Orinth again." Murtaugh gave her a grim, confirming nod. Aelin shrugged.
"So we don't touch him. We play his game, play by rules and laws and oaths."
Several feet away, Lysandra and Evangeline still spoke softly, the girl now crying in her mistress's arms, Fleetfoot anxiously nuzzling her hip. Aelin met Murtaugh's stare.
"I do not know you, Lord, but you were loyal to my uncle, to my family these long years."
She slid a dagger free of a hidden sheath along her thigh. They flinched as she sliced into her palm. Even Adian started. Aelin clenched her bloodied palm into a fist, holding it in the air between them.
"Because of that loyalty, you will understand what blood promises mean to me when I say that if that girl comes to harm, physical or otherwise, I do not care what laws exist, what rules I will break."
Lysandra had now turned to them, her shifter senses detecting blood.
"If Evangeline is hurt, you will burn. All of you."
"Threatening your loyal court?"
sneered a cold voice, as Darrow halted a few feet away. Aelin ignored him. Murtaugh was wide-eyed. So was Ren. Her blood seeped into the sacred earth.
"Let this be your test."
Adian swore. He understood. If the lords of Terrasen could not keep one child safe in their kingdom, could not find it in themselves to save Evangeline, to look after someone who could do them no good, gain them no wealth or rank, they would deserve to perish. Murtaugh bowed again.
"Your will is mine, Majesty."
He added quietly,
"I lost my granddaughters. I will not lose another."
With that, the old man walked toward where Darrow waited, pulling the lord aside. Her heart strained, but Aelin said to Ren, that scar hidden behind the shadows of his rain-drenched hood,
"I wish we had time to speak. Time for me to explain."
"You're good at walking away from this kingdom. I don't see why now would be different."
Adian let out a snarl, but Aelin cut him off. "Judge me all you like, Ren Alsbrook, but do not fail this kingdom."
She saw the unspoken retort flash in Ren's eyes,
like you did for 10 years. The blow struck low and deep, but she turned away. As she did, she noted how Ren's eyes fell on the little girl, on the brutal scars across Evangeline's face, near twins to the ones on his own. Something in his gaze softened just a bit. But Darrow was thundering toward Aelin now, pushing past Murtaugh, his face white with anger.
"You?"
he started. Aelin held up a hand, flame leaping at her fingertips, rain turning to steam above it. Blood snaked down her wrist from the deep cut, sibling to the other on her right hand, bright as Goldrin's ruby, peeking over her shoulder. I'll make one more promise, she said, folding her bloodied hand into a fist as she lowered it before them. Darrow tensed. Her blood dripped onto the sacred soil of Terrasen, and her smile turned lethal. Even Adian held his breath beside her. Aelin said, I promise you that no matter how far I go, no matter the cost, when you call for my aid, I will come. I promise you on my blood, on my family's name, that I will not turn my back on Terrasen as you have turned your back on me. I promise you, Darrow, that when the day comes and you crawl for my help, I will put my kingdom before my pride and not kill you for this. I think the true punishment will be seeing me on the throne for the rest of your miserable life. His face had gone from white to purple. She just turned away. Where do you think you're going? Darrow demanded. So Murtaugh had not filled him in on her plan to go to the Dead Islands. Interesting. She looked over her shoulder. To call in old debts and promises. To raise an army of assassins and thieves and exiles and commoners. To finish what was started long, long ago. Silence was his answer. So Aelin and Adian strode to where Lysandra now monitored them, solemn-faced in the rain, Evangeline hugging herself as Fleetfoot leaned against the silently weeping girl. Aelin said to the shapeshifter and the general, locking out the sorrow from her heart, locking out the pain and worry from her mind, We travel now. And when they dispersed to gather the horses, Adian brushing a kiss to Evangeline's soaked head, before Murtaugh and Wren led her back to the inn with considerable gentleness, Darrow striding ahead with no farewell whatsoever. When Aelin was alone, she finally approached that shadowed, gnarled tree. The little folk had known about the wyvern attack this morning. So she'd supposed that this little effigy, already falling apart under the torrent of rain, was another message of sorts. One just for her. Brannan's temple on the coast had been rendered carefully, a clever little contraption of twigs and rocks to form the pillars and altar. And on the sacred rock in its center, they'd created a white stag from raw sheep's wool, his mighty antlers no more than curling thorns. An order. Where to go? What she needed to obtain? She was willing to listen, play along, even if it had meant telling the others only half the truth. Aelin broke apart the temple reconstruction, but left the stag in her palm, the wool deflating in the rain. Horses nickered as Adian and Lysandra hauled them closer, but Aelin felt him a heartbeat before he emerged between the distant night-veiled trees. Too far in the wood to be anything but a ghost, a figment of an ancient god's dream. Barely breathing, she watched him for as long as she dared. And when Aelin mounted her horse, she wondered if her companions could tell that it was not rain gleaming on her face as she tugged on her black hood. Wondered if they, too, had spied the Lord of the North, standing watch deep in the forest, the white stag's immortal glow muted in the rain. Come to bid Aelin Galathinius farewell. Chapter 6 Dorian Havilliard, King of Otterlin, hated the silence. It had become his companion, walking beside him through the near-empty halls of his stone castle, crouching in the corner of his cluttered tower room at night, sitting across the table at each meal. He had always known he would one day be king. He had not expected to inherit a shattered throne and vacant stronghold. His mother and younger brother were still ensconced in their mountain residence in Ararat. He had not sent for them. He'd given the order to remain, actually. If only because it would mean the return of his mother's preening court, and he'd gladly take the silence over their tittering. If only because it would mean looking into his mother's face, his brother's face, and lying about who had destroyed the glass castle, who had slaughtered most of their courtiers, and who had ended his father. Lying about what his father had been, the demon that had dwelled inside him. A demon that had reproduced with his mother not once, but twice. Standing on the small stone balcony atop his private tower, Dorian gazed at the glittering sprawl of Rifthold beneath the setting sun, at the sparkling ribbon of the Avery as it wended inland from the sea, curving around the city like the coils of a snake, and then flowing straight through the continent's heart. He lifted his hands before the view, his palms calloused from the exercises and swordplay he'd made himself start learning once more. His favorite guards, Kaol's men, were all dead, tortured and killed. His memories of his time beneath the Wordstone Collar were dim and blurred. But in his nightmares, he sometimes stood in a dungeon far beneath this castle, blood that was not his own coating his hands, screams that were not his own ringing in his ears, begging him for mercy. Not him, he told himself. The Volg Prince had done it. His father had done it. He'd still had difficulty meeting the stare of the new captain of the guard, a friend of Nezrin Falik, as he'd asked the man to show him how to fight, help him become stronger, faster. Never again. Never again would he be weak and useless and frightened. Dorian cast his gaze southward, as if he could see all the way to Antica. He wondered if Kaol and Nezrin had gotten there, wondered if his friend was already at the Torre Chesme, having his broken body healed by its gifted masters. The demon inside his father had done that, too, snapped Kaol's spine. The man fighting inside his father had kept the blow from being fatal. Dorian had possessed no such control, no such strength, when he watched the demon use his own body, when the demon had tortured and killed and taken what it wanted. Maybe his father had been the stronger man in the end, the better man. Not that he'd ever had a chance to know him as a man, as a human. Dorian flexed his fingers, frost sparking in his palm. Raw magic. Yet there was no one here to teach him, no one he dared ask. He leaned against the stone wall beside the balcony door. He lifted his hand toward the pale band marking his throat. Even with the hours he'd spent outside training, the skin where the collar had once laid had not darkened to a golden tan. Maybe it always would remain pale. Maybe his dreams would always be haunted by that demon prince's hissing voice. Maybe he would always wake up with his sweat feeling like Sorsha's blood on him, like Aelin's blood as he stabbed her. Aelin. Not a word from her, or from anyone regarding the queen's return to her kingdom. He tried not to worry, to contemplate why there was such silence. Such silence, when Nezrin and Kaol's scouts now brought him news that Morath was stirring. Dorian glanced inside, toward the pile of papers on his cluttered desk, and winced. He still had a disgusting amount of paperwork to do before sleep. Letters to sign, plans to read. Thunder murmured across the city. Perhaps a sign that he should get to work, unless he wanted to be up until the black hours of the morning once again. Dorian turned and sighed, sighing sharply through his nose, and thunder boomed again. Too soon. And the sound too short-lived. Dorian scanned the horizon. No clouds. Nothing but the red and pink and gold sky. but the city lounging at the foot of the castle's hill seemed to pause. Even the muddy Avery seemed to halt its slithering, as the boom sounded again. He had heard that sound before. His magic roiled in his veins, and he wondered what it sensed as ice coated his balcony against his will. So swift and cold, the stones groaned. He tried to reel it back in, as if it were a ball of yarn that had tumbled from his hands. But it ignored him, spreading thicker, faster over the stones. Along the arch of the doorway behind him, down the curving face of the tower. A horn sounded in the west, a high bleating note. It was cut off before it finished. With the angle of the balcony, he couldn't see its source. He rushed into his room, leaving his magic to the stones, and hurtled for the open western window. He was halfway through the pillars of books and papers when he spied the horizon, when his city began screaming. Spreading into the distance, blotting out the sunset like a storm of bats, flew a legion of wyverns. Each bore armed witches, roaring their battle cries to the color-stained sky. Manon and her 13 had been flying without stop, without sleep. They'd left the two escort covens behind yesterday, their wyverns too exhausted to keep up, especially when the 13 had been going on all those extra runs and patrols for months, and had quietly, solidly built up their stamina. They flew high to keep hidden, and through gaps in the clouds, the continent had flashed below in varying shades of summer green and butter yellow and sparkling sapphire. Today had been clear enough that no clouds concealed them as they hurtled for Rifthold, the sun beginning its final descent toward the west, toward her lost homeland. With the height and distance, Manon fully beheld the carnage as the horizon at last revealed the sprawl of the capital city. The attack had begun without her. Iskra's legion was still falling upon it, still spearing for the palace and the glass wall that crested over the city at its eastern edge. She nudged Abraxos with her knees, a silent command to go faster. He did, but barely. He was drained. They all were. Iskra wanted the victory for herself. Manon had no doubt the Yellowleg's heir had received orders to yield, but only once Manon arrived. Bitch. Bitch to get here first, not to wait. Closer and closer they swept for the city. The screams reached them soon enough. Her red cape became a millstone. Manon aimed Abraxos for the stone castle atop the hill, barely peeking above that shining glass wall, the wall she had been ordered to bring down, and hoped she had not been too late in one regard. And that she knew what the hell she was doing. Chapter 7 Dorian had sounded the alarm, but the guards already knew, and when he'd gone to rush down the tower stairs, they blocked his path, telling him to stay in his tower. He tried to go again, to help, but they begged him to stay. Begged him, so that they would not lose him. It was the desperation, how young their voices were, that kept him in the tower, but not useless. Dorian stood atop his balcony, a hand raised before him. From the distance, he could do nothing as the wyverns unleashed hell beyond the glass wall. They shredded through buildings, ripping apart roofs with their talons, snatching up people, his people, from the street. They covered the skies like a blanket of fangs and claws, and though arrows from the city guards hit true, the wyverns did not pause. Dorian rallied his magic, willing it to obey, summoning ice and wind to his palm, letting it build. He should have trained, should have asked Aelin to teach him something when she was here. The wyverns sailed closer to the castle, and the glass wall still around it, as if they'd wanted to show him precisely how powerless he was before they came for him. Let them come. let them get close enough for his magic. He might not have Aelin's long range, might not be able to encircle the city with his power, but if they got close enough, he would not be weak or cowering again. The first of the wyverns crested the glass wall. Huge, so much bigger than the white-haired witch and her scarred mount. Six of them flapped for his castle, for his tower, for its king. He'd give them a king. He let them draw nearer, clenching his fingers into a fist, burrowing down, down, down into his magic. Many witches lingered at the glass wall, slamming their wyverns' tails into it, cracking that opaque glass bit by bit, like the six who sailed for the castle were all it would take to sack it. He could see their figures now, see their iron-studded leather, the setting sun glinting on the massive breastplates of the wyverns as they raced over the still-healing castle grounds. And when Dorian could see their iron teeth as they grinned at him, when the shouts of the guards so valiantly firing arrows from the castle doors and windows became a din in his ears, he extended his hand toward the witches. Ice and wind tore into them, shredding through beast and rider. The guards shouted in alarm, then fell into a stunned silence. Dorian gasped for breath, gasped to remember his name and what he was as the magic drained out of him. He'd killed while enslaved, but never of his own free will. And as the dead meat rained down, thudding on the castle grounds, as their blood misted the air, more, his magic moaned, spiraling down and up at the same time, dragging him again into its icy eddies. Beyond the cracking glass wall, his city was bleeding, screaming in terror. Four more wyverns crossed the now crumbling glass wall, banking as the riders beheld their shredded sisters. Cries shattered from their immortal throats, the tendrils of the yellow bands across their brows snapping in the wind. They shot their wyverns into the sky, as if they'd rise and rise and then plunge down directly atop him. A smile danced on Dorian's lips as he unleashed his magic again, a two-pronged whip snapping for the ascending wyverns. More blood and chunks of wyvern and witch fell to the ground, all coated with ice so thick they shattered upon the courtyard flagstones. Dorian tunneled deeper. Maybe if he could get into the city, he could cast a wider net. That was when the other attack hit, not from ahead or above or below, but from behind. His tower rocked to the side, and Dorian was flung forward, slamming into the stone balcony, narrowly avoiding flipping over the edge. Stone cracked and wood splintered, and he was spared from a crushing bit of rock only by the magic he'd flung around himself as he covered his head. He whirled toward the interior of his bedroom. A giant, gaping hole had been ripped into the side and roof. And perched on the broken stone, a solidly built witch now smiled at him with flesh-shredding iron teeth, a faded band of yellow leather around her brow. He rallied his magic, but it sputtered to a flicker. Too soon, too fast, he realized, too uncontrolled, not enough time to draw up the full depths of his power. The wyvern's head snaked into the tower. Behind him, six other wyverns crested the wall, soaring for his exposed back. And the wall itself, Aelin's wall, beneath those frantic, furious claws and tails, it collapsed entirely. Dorian eyed the door to the tower stairs, where the guards should have already been charging through. Only silence waited. So close, but getting to it would require passing in front of the wyvern's maw, exactly why the witch was smiling. One chance. He'd have one chance to do this. Dorian clenched his fingers, not granting the witch time to study him further. He flung out a hand, ice shattering from his palm and into the eyes of the wyvern. It roared, rearing back, and he ran. Something sharp nicked his ear and embedded in the wall before him. A dagger, He kept sprinting for the door. The tail whipped through his vision a heartbeat before it slammed into his side. His magic was a film around him, shielding his bones, his skull, as he was hurled against the stone wall. Hard enough that the stones cracked. Hard enough that most humans would have been dead. Stars and darkness danced in his vision. The door was so close. Dorian tried to rise, but his limbs wouldn't obey. Stunned by... Wet warmth leaked just below his ribs. Blood. Not a deep cut, but enough to hurt, courtesy of one of the spines on that tail. Spines coated in a greenish sheen. Venom. Some sort of venom that weakened and paralyzed before it killed. He wouldn't be taken again, not to Morath, not to the Duke and his callers. His magic thrashed against the venom's paralyzing lethal kiss. Healing magic. But slow, weakened by his careless expenditure moments before. Dorian tried to crawl for the door, panting through his gritted teeth. The witch barked a command to her wyvern, and Dorian rallied enough to crane his head, to see her draw her swords and begin to dismount. No, no, no! The witch didn't make it to the ground. One heartbeat she was perched in her saddle, swinging a leg over. The next, her head was gone, her blood spraying her wyvern as it roared and turned, and was slammed off the tower by another smaller wyvern, scarred and vicious, with glimmering wings. Dorian didn't wait to see what happened, didn't wonder. He crawled for the door, his magic devouring the venom that should have killed him, a raging torrent of light fighting with all of its considerable force against that greenish darkness. Cleaved skin, muscle, and bone itched as they slowly knit together, and that spark flickered and guttered in his veins. Dorian was reaching for the door handle when the small wyvern landed in the ruined hole of his tower, its enormous fangs dripping blood onto the scattered paperwork he'd been grousing over mere minutes ago. Its armored, lithe rider nimbly leaped off, the arrows in the quiver across her back clacking against the hilt of the mighty sword now strapped alongside it. She hauled away the helmet crowned with slender, lance-like blades. He knew her face before he remembered her name. Knew the white hair, like moonlight on water, that spilled over her dark, scale-like armor. Knew the burnt gold eyes. Knew that impossibly beautiful face, full of cold bloodlust and wicked cunning. "Get up," Manon Blackbeak snarled. "Shit." The word was a steady chant in Manon's head, as she stalked across the ruins of the king's tower, armor thundering against the fallen stones, fluttering paper and scattered books. Shit, shit, shit. Iskra was nowhere to be found, not by the castle at least, but her coven was. And when Manon had spied that yellow-legged sentinel perched inside the tower, readying to claim this kill for herself, a century of training and instinct had barreled into Manon. All it had taken was one swipe of Windcleaver as Abraxos flew by, and Iskra's sentinel was dead. Shit, shit, shit! Then Abraxos attacked the remaining mount, a dull-eyed bull who hadn't even the chance to roar before Abraxos's teeth were clamped around his broad throat, and blood and flesh were flying as they tumbled through the air. She didn't have a heartbeat to spare to marvel that Abraxos had not balked at the fight, that he had not yielded. Her warrior-hearted wyvern. She'd give him an extra ration of meat. The young king's dark bloody jacket was coated in dust and dirt, but his sapphire eyes were clear, if not wide, as she snarled again over the screaming city. "Get up!" He reached a hand toward the iron door handle, not to call for help or flee, she realized, now a foot from him, but to raise himself. Manon studied his long legs, more muscled than the last time she'd seen him. Then she noted the wound peeking through the side of his torn jacket. Not deep and not gushing, but
Shit, shit, shit!
The venom of the wyvern's tail was deadly at work.